Behind the Curtain with Jack Berkman.
Welcome to another week of Behind the Curtain, where I, as a Washington lobbyist, give you a behind-the-scenes perspective on what's going on in Washington. You know, I'm not a talking head or a journalist. I work my contacts in the halls of Congress, where I am every day of the week. I go to parties and dinners and happy hours, and I will bring you info that I hear, and I bring it straight to you, that the establishment media and no media ever will. What a show we've got. We're going to get into immigration. We're going to get into foreign policy, North Korea, Iran. Finally, Mueller, Bob Mueller, whom I call the devil, capital T, capital D. Wait till you hear the behind-the-scenes wrangling going on with Trump's lawyers and Mueller. My God, I hope the president doesn't give Mueller a deposition. We'll be talking about that later in the show. But first up, immigration. We have with us David Beer, a great immigration policy analyst with the Cato Institute. David, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us again. Well, Cato has just done a great study where it focuses on vetting and immigration. And that is, this is all the stuff the Trump administration is worried about. How do we keep the bad people out? How do we not throw away the baby with the bathwater? Tell us about that study.
Well, my study looked at the last 30 years of immigration and travelers coming to the United States and estimated the number of people who entered the United States who were already radicalized before they applied for their opportunity to come to the United States. And that's really what the extreme vetting narrative is about, focused on the people who already had the intention to do us harm or already had connections to terrorist groups.
So does the study suggest that the vetting works for these people or that it doesn't work in terms of keeping them out?
It has improved dramatically since the September 11th terrorist attacks. Essentially, there were four times as many terrorist infiltrations of our immigration system before 9/11. Since 9/11, we brought that rate down by 84%. Just one in every 29 million people who travel to the United States or immigrate here are terrorists or people who are sympathetic to a terrorist and then go on to commit a terrorist offense.
So this is all good for Donald Trump in that it bodes well for what he wants to do, limit people from certain countries, certain parts of the world. All of that is a kind of vetting. It's heightened vetting. It's heightened scrutiny. Doesn't this bode well for the Trump plan?
Well, I would disagree with that. Actually, what we saw after 9/11 is that targeted measures that focused on individuals rather than entire groups or certain categories of immigrants, really, we didn't ban all immigrants from certain countries. We focused on measures that would actually improve the vetting of individuals, and that is what brought down the rate, not trying to ban certain countries. In fact, there was only one nationality that is on the president's eight-country banned list that had a vetting failure over the last 30 years. So his proposal is not really aligned very well with the facts.
Okay, I see your point, but these things aren't mutually exclusive. Why not do both? Why not do the kind of vetting we're doing and then layer on the Trump thing, and that keeps out even more undesirables? Maybe a few good people will be kept out too, but you know what? Who cares? Why do we even want to take the risk, right?
Well, it would have been 100% good people over the last 30 years from these various countries that he's targeting. What I favor is measures that actually focus on things that we know are problems with the system. And you want to allow good people to come to the United States because they spend their money here, they increase the economy. All those things allow us to expand our security measures elsewhere. What you want to do is you want to focus on measures that are going to weed out the bad people but allow the good people to
But at the same time, do we really want, if you look at Somalia and Libya, which are nothing but failed, collapsing states, they're not even countries anymore. Surely you would agree that we should have blanket bans on people from those states, right? We don't want any people from Somalia in the country. Doesn't that make sense?
I mean, those two countries have never sent us a terrorist who's killed anyone in the United States. So the idea that we are sending people here who are already radicalized, they come here and they kill people, I mean, that's just the wrong narrative. And the idea that Libya and Somalia in particular are higher threats than other countries is also not borne out by the facts. You know, in fact, it's other countries that have resulted in higher death tolls as a result of terrorism.
It would seem to me there's more to immigration vetting than just weeding out the bad guys. Shouldn't we make a deliberate effort to get the good guys and the great guys? In other words, I don't really want a lot of average people coming here. I want people with money, people with high education. Isn't that what we used to do, people that are useful to us? We're not doing that anymore. I mean, isn't there more than just weeding out terrorists? Don't we want to get the cream of the crop for America?
Well, of course, we're going to have an immigration system on top of our vetting system. This is just about, you know, one aspect of the immigration system that's improved dramatically over the years. And we've improved it by focusing on the bad people. And the good people are selected through the rest of the immigration system. We want to allow people who are coming here for good purposes. They want to come and spend their money here, or they want to come to reunite with their family, or they come because they are workers who are in demand for our economy.
Let me ask you this. Talking about vetting, let's tell our viewers what the vetting is. A lot of people probably say, what is this vetting? How much do we know about vetting? What kind of vetting is done to get to these conclusions?
Well, after 9/11, really, we adapted a model where the surveillance community really interacts directly with the immigration vetting services, whether the State Department or the immigration services. And it's the responsibility of our surveillance apparatus around the world to collect information on people who have ties to these terrorist organizations or groups, and then funnel that information into the immigration service vetting process. And that's what's really worked. If you look at the vetting failures that have been reduced since 9/11, they're almost entirely from the most dangerous category of terrorists, people with prior ties to a terrorist organization. We've reduced that dramatically since 9/11 by more than 90%. And so that's really what we want to target. We want to reduce those really severe failures. You know, if someone comes here and, you know, then they send $50 back to Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Mm. I mean, that's a problem. We need to stop that as well. But the main thing is protecting the lives of Americans.
You know, it would seem to me that we have the immigration problem largely under control, with the exception of the Mexican border, because none of this has anything to do with people running over the border at night and sneaking into the country, right? So it would seem to me if we could fix that problem, sure, the United States may have fixed all of its immigration problems.
I would certainly argue that terrorists running across the border is an overblown threat. There hasn't been an example of someone who's...
Not terrorists. I'm talking about anybody. I mean, I'm talking about different. We're talking about apples and oranges, not necessarily terrorists. I'm saying that it would seem to me the last big remaining problem are illegals coming over the Mexican border.
And that problem has been reduced dramatically as well. Since 1986, there were about 500 people being apprehended by Border Patrol agents during the course of 1986. We've reduced that down to 17 last year under the Trump administration. So a dramatic improvement in border security during that period of time, each agent essentially catching less than one person every other week, is a really impressive accomplishment that our border security has done. And really, one of the big reasons for that is that we've allowed more people to come to the United States legally through temporary worker programs and other means. And that has helped Border Patrol secure the border. So it works together. Letting legal people come legally helps you clamp down on the illegal traffic.
All right, David Beer, immigration policy analyst, Cato Institute. Thank you, David. Look forward to hearing from you again. Well, coming up next, we're going to get into Iran, North Korea, and the big meeting with the Rocket Man and DJT. Stay tuned.
All the stories and controversies that no one talks about, but everyone should know about.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Behind the Curtain with Jack Berkman.
Welcome back. Remember, if you want to take it behind the curtain, you call us 703-795-5364, 703-795-5364. Operators are standing by 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, all times Eastern Standard Time. Remember that for those of you on the West Coast. Taking your emails now, coming into the 20th century, not the 21st, never the 21st. JackBerkman2016 at Gmail. JackBerkman2016 at Gmail. Same number, same email. If you know anything about the Seth Rich murder mystery, and we're getting ready, we're getting closer to releasing the big reenactment. You don't want to miss it. We're getting warmer. We're doing the final touch-ups. It's coming. Same number, 703-795-5364. Later in the show, we'll be talking all things about the devil, capital T, capital D. You know who that is, Bob Mueller, and his ongoing battle with the president's legal team, which never seems to end. Joining us now, Dr. Megan Rice, to talk all about North Korea, Iran, and this ever-changing, unstable world. Doctor?
Thanks for having me back.
Well, your PhD and your expertise is in deterrence, and that is the watchword. Tell us about this meeting now with Mr. Un, the rocket man of the Donald. Now, my take is, I think this is the worst thing Trump could do. Donald Trump wants to go mano a mano. He wants to keep the focus excessively on himself. I understand it fits perfectly with the Trump philosophy. I think it's bad. I think it's horrendous on a number of levels. First of all, it legitimates him. More importantly, it gives impetus and gives power to the growing trend toward reunification. Obviously, the South Korean leadership is under pressure to move toward reunification, to move toward normalization. Trump's meeting with Un pushes that trend, which is something we don't want to do. It's almost like Germany in the 60s, right?
Yeah. So my take on it is the U.S., one of our primary objectives has to be that we remain a presence in the region. We do not want to leave this area. We want to remain a presence. We want to keep our troops in there. We want to balance against China as they're doing all of this stuff. And we want to be able to be there when North Korea reneges on whatever it decides to promise, which it almost definitely will because it's done it repeatedly in the past. And so my concern with some of these negotiations that are happening is that people may not be steeped in history, that they may want to push for peace or reunification or whatever over what we've seen Kim Jong-un doing repeatedly in like aggravating the situation over and over. He hasn't done anything so far that should make us think that he's going to keep whatever promise he makes.
But do you agree with me that if the South Korean people see Un and the president together, that they'll say, well, we're right. We should move toward reunification. Do you agree that it helps accelerate that trend? I mean, what do you see there?
So I see them absolutely thinking that this is a more likely end result. What that would look like, I have no idea. Obviously, Kim Jong-un isn't going to want to give up power. So reunification isn't going to happen under a Kim regime. But I just literally cannot picture, with the current situation as it exists, reunification happening. And we have to remember, this is a really, really, really bad guy running a really bad regime. And so I don't want us to give up a bunch of carrots to him as reward for being a bad actor.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let me see it would seem to me with North Korea, we're in the same situation as Iran. And that is slowly, inevitably, inexorably, we're moving toward a nuclearized North Korea. Whatever happens with the sanctions, whatever happens with the meeting, North Korea is on track to acquire a nuclear capacity, and I don't see anything changing that short of force, right? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the United States is going to have to make a decision to use force here. I mean, unless we want to tolerate a nuclearized North Korea. Does Trump, in a lot of ways, think the same as Obama, maybe more bluster, more presence, but at the end of the day, the same real policy in that we will simply agree to tolerate as inevitable a nuclearized North Korea?
I'm not sure this administration thinks it's inevitable. I do think that the way things were going prior to this additional pressure campaign that we started, it was inevitable. I think they are actually committed to what they've said over and over, that we will not accept a nuclear North Korea with a ballistic missile capability that could reach the U.S.
But is there any way to achieve that goal short of force?
Well, my question is actually what's going on inside North Korea, and we don't quite know what that is. So I'm not sure that his willingness to say that he'll stop developing nuclear weapons right now isn't at least partially a result of this pressure campaign. And I'm not sure about what that means for...
I think that's a no. That sounds like a no, right? It sounds like you agree with me, but you sound like you're agreeing
with me. We could get to it without using force.
What are those?
But there are, I think that we put as much pressure as possible on North Korea, and I think we get China on board.
Let me ask you this. What do you think of, I still think it's inevitable. It's like Iran. It's just a question of time. All the rest is just is window dressing. Let me ask you this. What do you think of my idea? I think what we need is not a multilateral plan, but a bilateral plan where the Chinese won't want to do this. They make money off North Korea. They don't want the cost, the expense. I think we need to eliminate the North Korean regime and bring the Chinese in and just have North Korea assimilated into China. And I think we need to refortify the parallel. And I think that will solve the problem and stabilize the region. The South Koreans wouldn't like it, but too bad. I think that brings stability, and I think it serves America's interest and China. Because at this point, the last thing China wants is a major, even if China wanted war in Asia, it's not ready to take on the United States, doesn't want that, doesn't want North Korea as a flashpoint. Although this would be inconvenient, I think it's a good solution for both countries.
I mean, it's not, it would be less likely to lead to a nuclear conflict, that's for sure. China still really, really, really doesn't want to assimilate a bunch of very poor North Koreans who have been indoctrinated since birth. I mean, another just kind of it will never happen theory that I think is kind of interesting. Do what the Europeans have done with some of the like the really nasty players that they don't know what to do with, the mob leaders and such. Give him an island. Let him run a little island by himself.
Corsica. Is there the equivalent of Corsica, which is where, for viewers, you may not know Napoleon, that's where Napoleon was exiled. Is there a Corsica anywhere near Korea? All right, let me ask you this now.
The Chinese keep building islands.
That's a good boy. That's funny. You're funny, Megan. In the time remaining here, about a minute and a half left, what should Trump avoid? We know why he wants to do this. That's obvious. But what should he avoid in this meeting?
Letting American troops remaining in South Korea be on the table. And Mattis referred that might be an option. I think that would be the absolute worst thing.
Oh, that's crazy. They could never do that. There's no base. I don't think Trump would even consider that. Do you?
I hope not. But Mattis actually said that might be on the table. And there were some news stories coming out that in February he was wanting the U.S. to sort of get out. And that would be the absolute worst thing for us to do.
I don't know why, Matt. Maybe they're saying that. Maybe they had to say that just to get the Rocket Man to the table. Yeah. Was the Rocket Man eager to do this? I mean, it seems so in the media, but what was the reality? Was the Rocket Man eager for this?
They seem to be pushing it, which means that there's some pressure going on in North Korea that makes this seem like a better option. He either thinks the U.S. is about to actually strike them, or the sanctions and all this pressure is actually making it so he can't maintain power well in North Korea. Something is working.
Thank you so much, Megan. If we're real lucky, we'll be able to have you back again. Well, coming up next, we're going to get into the economy. How good is the Trump economy? And most importantly, politically, will it hold until 2020? If you want to take it behind the curtain, you remember, call us 703-795-5364. Also remember, if you have something you want us to bring before Congress for you, you call the same number, 703-795-5364. And your emails, jackberkman2016@gmail.com. Coming up next, we're going to get into the economy. Will the good economy hold all the way to 2020. Stay tuned.
This is a universe where everything is depicted as a Washington Post political cartoon.
Behind the Curtain with Jack Berkman.
Coming up later in the show, we'll be talking all things about the devil, capital T, capital D, Bob Mueller and his battle with Donald Trump's lawyers. Oh, my God, I hope the president doesn't take the cheese and fall right into Mueller's trap. That's not what we need, just as he's doing so well. We hope and pray that his team will keep him away from that. Oh, and then at the end of the show, we've got part four, which you've been waiting for a long time, but we finally have part four of our for our rant on transsexuals. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. We're going to tell you what we need to do for trannies. Remember, this is the show that fights for tranny rights. Don't you miss that, all you trannies out there, if you're watching. First up, Jordan Goodman, personal finance expert, radio talk show host in his own right, commentator in his own right, America's Money Answers man, the man with all the financial answers. Jordan, welcome.
Great to be with you, Jack.
Well, obviously the economy is good. I got two questions for you. You got to tell us how good it is. And then more importantly, will it hold for 2018 election, presuming yes, and will it hold for Donald Trump in November of 20?
The economy's got a lot of momentum right now. We've had some good unemployment reports. Retail sales have been pretty good. Businesses investing because of the tax reform. We've seen bonuses giving out. Stock market's been doing relatively well because these companies have this huge windfall, which they're passing on to the shareholders in the form of higher dividends, stock buybacks. This last week, Apple, $100 billion stock buyback. We've never seen anything like that, Jack. So that's a sign of confidence to some extent. And one of the reasons interest rates are rising is the economy is getting better. So when there's more demand for money, interest rates rise. So overall, the economy is got some real strength here. As far as the midterms, though, the question is, are people going to vote their pocketbooks? And usually they do. And in some cases they might. But I think there's other things going on with this election. They may not.
Democrats, you know, James Carville's old adage, it's the economy, stupid. Democrats, in a lot of ways, I don't think Republicans, particularly at the congressional level, are taking advantage of the current situation. Democrats, as I see it, are in a conceptual box because you've got a great economy. They really have nothing to say there. You also, I mean, you have a situation where unemployment is low. The other bigger problem is Trump has captured the populist economic mantle. Even people right. like Bernie Sanders, I mean, what in the world are you going to say? I guess you can talk about Wall Street reforms, but Donald Trump is widely perceived as the advocate for workers in the Rust Belt, not Bernie and Nancy, right?
Yeah, I mean, Bernie wants to do Medicare for all, raise taxes on the wealthy, free college tuition, you know, all kinds of wonderful giveaways. So that's not going to go anywhere, but that's what he's offering.
Basically. But of course, he will always go further. So if Trump endorsed all that tomorrow, if the conservatives endorsed all of that platform tomorrow, Bernie would go another three steps and another three steps, just more and more redistribution. He would never stop. He would just run right. left until he fell off the side of the earth. And we know that. But my point is, are Republicans taking advantage? You outline well all of the economic factors. Don't we need to take better political advantage of them? I don't think we are.
I agree with you. I mean, just to give you one example, the Midwest, which went very strongly for Trump, Iowa, Wisconsin, farm states and so on, they went very, very strongly for Trump. But they're very concerned right now about a trade war with China and losing the markets for their exports, for soybeans and corn and wheat and all that. So, and that would overwhelm other things they might normally vote Republican, but they're really concerned, I think rightly so. If we get into a trade war with China, we're going to have a lot fewer exports to them, and then they could really get hurt. So those are the kind of things that I think affecting people who would normally vote Republican.
So the politics of tariffs are a bit more complex than they are presented in the media. In other words, they're presented in the media as something, and this is what I've always thought, that maybe the workers in the Rust Belt will love them. And they will. But when you get into the Midwest with agriculture, it gets a lot more complex, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. And we've had tariffs go into effect on aluminum and steel. So that helps the steel producing and aluminum producing companies in America. But it hurts the aluminum and steel consuming companies, of whom there are far more. Okay. So it's helping a relatively small amount of people, but hurting not only the companies, but the individuals. You're seeing higher steel and aluminum prices for American consumers because those tariffs are working their way through the system right now.
I want to see if you agree with me, Jordan. My feeling about tariffs is Trump will do a lot more talk than action because there's an old adage in politics. You want the issue. You don't want the result. Trump wants the issue here. I don't think there will, like you saw this week, earlier in the week, he pulled back on, he said, well, we're not going to implement the European tariffs just yet. After all that talk and all that bluster for months, he's not bringing in the tariffs against the EU. What do you think of that?
for another 30 days.
I mean, for another 30 days. Well, but he may. But I mean, you really think so? In other words, as a general proposition, you think most of these tariffs will actually happen as opposed to just talk and bluster?
We're very close to that. Right now, as we speak, all the major U.S. economic officials are in China. Larry Kudlow, Peter Navarro, Wilbur Ross, Steve Mnuchin, all the big heavy hitters are there. And either they come away with some kind of agreement or concessions on the part of the Chinese, or they don't. And if they don't, I think we are going to actually have a trade war with China. I mean, right now, Trump is talking about $100 billion in tariffs. They're talking about $50 billion. The numbers are huge, and this will hurt economic growth. It'll hurt the stock markets a lot. So I hope they come away with some agreement, but I think it's going to be hard for the Chinese to kind of concede. They're not going to steal intellectual property anymore. They're not going to dump aluminum and steel. They're not going to have high tariffs. All the things they've been doing for many years, which making them stronger, to have them back off from that, it's going to be a big change, and we'll have to see if they can pull it off.
China, though, is like Germany. They're heavy. I mean, quite like as much as Germany as a percentage of GDP, but they're both heavy exporters. The United States has a lot of leverage against the heavy exporting countries, do we not?
Well, we're the big importer. We have a $375 billion deficit with China, and we're their largest customer. China and the U.S. are the two largest economies in the world. And what a difference, Jack, between having them get along, lowering barriers, not stealing each other's intellectual property, having a good trade relationship that is incredibly bullish for the world economy and markets, versus a trade war where we're trying to retaliate and tit for tat for every little, you know, that's a really bad situation. So
it shows you the fact right that the Chinese have such hard decisions and will fight on this to the end, as you suggest, it shows you the extent to which they rely on cheating. Their reliance, their reliance on cheating is probably great. Economic cheating is greater than any other country in the history of the modern world, at least, is it not?
I agree with you. Stealing technology, stealing software. A Disney movie will come out illegally in China before it comes out here. So you're right. They do cheat.
That's funny.
And Trump is completely right on the problem. The question is, what's the solution? And if the battering ram of tariffs and, you know, all those kind of things happens, and it doesn't work, then you get into a trade war. So
it would seem to me, it just occurred to me, we can use tariffs strategically in Asia, like we can use them to bolster the relationship with Japan and South Korea, and we can help those countries as they put the defensive ring around China and hit China harder. Although I guess Japan and South Korea really aren't the problem, because those economies, at least Japan was a lot more formidable 20 years ago economically than it is now.
Yeah, we just had a deal with South Korea, and we did that. We were threatening with tariffs, and they conceded in the end. We have a really good deal, and all the tariffs, like aluminum and steel, were taken off of Korea because we came up with a good deal. I think Trump sees that as like a precursor or a template from what might happen with China. I've been to China, and they are really very difficult. I don't think they're going to concede easily.
I've tried to do business with the Chinese over the years. I have no idea how anybody could. I mean, if you're anything smaller than Procter & Gamble, I really have no idea how you would penetrate the Chinese market or why anyone would try. To me, it seems borderline impossible.
We sell a lot of stuff to them. Like, agricultural is probably, but we sell Boeing airplanes. We sell Caterpillar tractors. There's tons of Starbucks there, McDonald's. I mean, we have a lot of our stuff in China. And that's good for us and good for them.
All right. Give us a prediction this year and next. How will the tariff stuff work out? Give me your overall prediction of what Trump's going to do.
I think we're going to have a trade war. I don't think China's going to concede. And that's going to be very negative. So maybe $100 billion in tariffs. That means that China's economy is going to go down. Ours is going to go down. That's very negative for the stock market here. So okay. I hope it doesn't work. That's my prediction, Jack, is we are going to have a trade war.
Final question now. Everybody wants to know what to do with their portfolio from America's Money Answers Man. What do you recommend in the market now, and how bad will it be in the market?
Time to be cautious. I mean, you take some money. We've had huge gains on the stock market for a long time. Take some money off the table and be conservative. I'll tell you what I'm doing, Jack. I'm doing what are called secured real estate funds, because that's a way of getting an 8% yield. But the price of it doesn't go up or down at all. Over 1 year, you get monthly checks, reinvested if you like. A website for that, secured real estate funds.
You short the Dow?
That's a little aggressive, but you could. If you have a trade war, you'd make a lot of money on the shorts, yes.
Yeah, maybe if what you say is true, I don't see a good reason. It's already high. I don't see a good reason not to short it. Well, Jordan Goodman, a man who knows a lot more. Don't take stock market advice from me, but you do take it from Jordan Goodman, America's Money Answers Man. Great personal finance expert. radio talk show host as well. If we're real lucky, we'll be able to have Jordan back again. Well, coming up next, we're going to get into the devil, capital T, capital D. Stay tuned.
All the stories and controversies that no one talks about, but everyone should know about.
Why don't you get a toupee with some brains in it?
Behind the Curtain with Jack Berkman.
Welcome back. Remember, if you want to take it behind the curtain, you call us 703-795-5364, 703-795-5364. Operators standing by 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturdays. Email jackberkman2016@gmail.com. Coming into the 20th century, not the 21st. Same number, same email. If you know anything about the Seth Rich murder mystery, and we are getting closer to the day you've been waiting for, which is the release, the big release of the Seth Rich murder reenactment, which will hopefully draw everything out of the woodwork that we need to draw to get this murder solved. We won't quit on the family. We won't quit on the city of Washington. We will get this done. We definitely will. Joining us now, Greg Corumbus, news director, Radio America, and one of the best and brightest political analysts in the country, and host of Three Martini Lunch. Greg, welcome.
Thanks, Jack. Good to be with you again.
Well, this Mueller thing, now, you know, I refer to him in my tweets as capital T, capital D, the devil. I mean, I presume we concur. You would think Trump should not deal with him in any way. Don't answer written interrogatories. Don't sit for a deposition. If I were Trump, I'm presuming you agree with me, but I'm not sure Trump should have no interface with Mueller.
That's my gut instinct, certainly, and some of the trusted legal minds that I interview from time to time have come to that conclusion as well, because, of course, the special counsel, the FBI, the Justice Department, they can throw out questions that they know aren't true, but it makes life very, very difficult for someone, even if you believe that what you're telling is the full truth. You don't know what they think they know, and that sort of thing. So it's a minefield, as others have said, for President Trump if he does this. And now with Mueller threatening this subpoena, it becomes perhaps even more of a minefield. But in the end, the president is probably best served by not going down this road.
What's your sense of that? I know you're not a lawyer. You're many things not a lawyer. But what's your sense of whether Mueller can constitutionally subpoena the president? What's your sense of what the legal analysts are saying? I'm presuming that he can't, that that's unconstitutional. Nonetheless, Mueller may want to do it as a PR tactic just to say, oh, well, Trump is now fighting the subpoena.
Well, that's certainly, I definitely agree with the latter part of that. I think the president is on pretty firm constitutional ground here. Ultimately, this is an agent of the executive branch, which the president heads. And so and there's obviously dispute about this on Capitol Hill, but I think precedent-wise and constitutionally speaking, he does have the power to fire Rosenstein, to fire Mueller, and certainly to not have to apply and obey the subpoena unless there's direct evidence suggesting that he has committed a crime here. And to this point, there seems to be no evidence to suggest that.
You know what I'm afraid of, Greg? I think what's going on here is Trump has the same desire to go mano a mano with Mueller as he does with the Rocket Man. And he shouldn't do either. I don't think he should be meeting with Oon. That's another subject. But I think he wants to do the same thing with Mueller. I think he wants that deposition where Mueller is taking it himself. And he may even want it filmed live, almost like the Clinton thing in 98. That's what he wants. He wants to show, he's determined to show the nation that he will face down Bob Mueller. But that may be his undoing, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's his undoing, but it is his instinct to take on those that he sees as a rival, and particularly a rival that he thinks is unjustifiably going after him. The president, clearly from his tweets and everything else, doesn't believe that he's done anything wrong or that members of his team have done anything wrong. The prosecutions Mueller's gotten to date, I'm sure he would use to beg to differ with that. But yes, the president's instinct is always to be confrontational, particularly when he thinks he has the high ground, and sometimes even when he doesn't. And it's obvious from his statements to date that he believes he has the high ground here because he thinks he has nothing to hide.
How much runway politically, PR-wise, does Mueller have left? I mean, clearly it's not eternal, even for the liberals. I mean, if we get after the election into 19, Mueller really hasn't done a whole lot. You've got the indictment of the 12 Russians that can't be brought back anyway. Okay, he did that. Maybe that's the one positive thing he's done. He's got Flynn on obstruction. He's got Gates on obstruction. That's all they want to get the president on. There's really no substantive results from Mueller in any way, shape, or form. He's lurching around. I mean, they're going after Cohen. No one knows if there's anything there or not. They're trying to terrorize him into saying something about the president. I mean, at some point, even Democrats have to start saying this may hurt us politically more than it helps us.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far yet. I think them talking about impeachment already, when we don't know what the conclusions are and the only convictions we have so far are process crimes, I think that's taking it too far. Opposing Donald Trump has worked out pretty well for them in some of these special elections and at least in some of the generic polls and even some specific polls heading into the midterms, although those seem to be tightening a little bit. So for them to suddenly support the president, I think is not going to be good for them, particularly if they have any primary opponents on the left side of the aisle. So I wouldn't go that far, but to hang their hat on the next Congress being all about the impeachment and conviction of President Trump could blow up in their face. It blew up for the Republicans in the 98 midterms when it was about President Clinton, even though they ended up doing that after the midterms. So the people want justice to be done if justice needs to be done. But in the end, they're more interested in how their family's doing. And if the Democrats are ignoring that at the point of making a political statement about Donald Trump, it's not going to work out overly well for him.
How do you think Mueller specifically is playing in election 2018? You point out where this saga is helping him in certain districts, has helped him in certain special elections, but he's gone against the president that has helped the Democrats in certain special elections. But as an overall matter, how do you think the Mueller saga plays in election 2018?
I think the more it's in the headlines, it might actually help the base on both sides, because if the Democrats do legitimately smell blood in the water, like this investigation is going somewhere other than to where it's gotten to this point, it might get their base even more fired up than it is right now. Whereas on the Republican side, if they feel like this really is a witch hunt and this really is going to be a referendum on whether Donald Trump stays in office or at least gets impeached, the Senate will never have the votes to convict him, then that could motivate their base as well, as the Democrats are all about scoring political points instead of improving the lives of Americans.
I'm starting to think that DJT is crazy like a fox, in that he really knows exactly. I'm starting to think Donald Trump is actually a brilliant long-term player. I've never thought that before, but take a look at what he's done 2 years running with the White House Correspondents' Dinner. While they're listening to whatever that filthy sex rant was with the swells in Washington drinking champagne, Trump knows just how to do this. He's in Michigan with blue-collar workers. Last year, he was in Pittsburgh for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He's showing that contrast. He's doing kind of the same way with same thing with Mueller. While Democrats in Washington and the swells talk about the legalisms with Bob Mueller, I'm up here with a working man. Maybe all this will play to his favor.
It does to a certain extent, but our news cycle is so rapidly changing now that I don't think folks in November are going to remember what happened on the last weekend in April specifically. But the themes potentially can continue if that's where Republicans and the president are focusing their attention now over the next 6 months, whereas Democrats are focusing on other things. I think while the president might have some long-term political instincts, I think the simpler fact is he's got some really unintelligent opponents who step in it more than they actually make him step in it. And they give him opportunity after opportunity. Just when the president's looking to be extreme in a number of ways, the Democrats once again remind them, whether it's the media or the politicians themselves, about why Donald Trump got elected in the first place.
Now, part of what I hear you saying, though, is that obviously Hillary's decision in 16 to focus entirely on Trump, his problems, legal problems, miscues, all that didn't work, right? But part of what I hear you saying is that the focus on those kinds of things may work better in 2018 for Dems than they did 16. Is that accurate?
Well, Hillary Clinton brought so much baggage with her that regardless of what she had to say about Donald Trump, people are going to remember what she brings to the table as well. If you've got some candidates running for office for the first time and they've spent their lives, you know, in the private sector somewhere and they don't have much of a paper trail or a voting record, then having that anti-Trump message tends to resonate a little more because there's not a lot of conflicting information or conflicting arguments going in the opposite direction. Hillary Clinton's come up with an endless stream of excuses about why she lost, but the main reason she lost is because people don't like or trust Hillary Clinton.
Let's look at the other side, back to Mueller for a minute. If you are, if you're a Republican candidate, and obviously the district, there's even more diversity on our side than their side. But if you look at Republican candidates, do you talk about Mueller? Is that something you talk about? Do you use it, as you suggest, to rally your base and say, look what they're doing. Look what they're doing to our president. Do you do that? I mean, it's part and parcel of the broader issue of how close do you get to DJT?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if you get specific enough to talk about Mueller. You can talk about how the Democrats are simply licking their chops to go after Donald Trump. They're not about trying to force policy in a way that'll improve your life. Always make it about the individual when you're on the campaign trail. It's but the Democrats are just about scoring political points. They're still bent out of shape about the 2016 election, and on and on and on. And then that's, they're going to waste the next 2 years trying to settle political scores and trying to, instead of trying to get things done. That's the message I think most Republicans are going to have.
Here's a final question. Do you think Donald Trump will get a lot of invitations this year to join candidates, particularly House candidates, on the trail?
In swing districts and purple districts, probably not. If it's an issue of turning out the base in a normally red district where a candidate is struggling, you might see him in some of those places.
All right. Now, I said final question, but I do have one more. Tell me now, I want your prediction, House and Senate, because I'm tracking your predictions. When I call you the brightest political analyst in the country, I'm going to track your predictions, Greg. House and Senate, where are you now?
Well, it's only the last prediction that actually counts, Jack, I hope. But right now, I would say the Democrats will take back the House. Let's say they win or take over 30 seats. So that would give them not that many, but they would be in the majority.
Four or five. You're very close. I mean, we might get into a situation in the House where it's one or two either way. We can have an exciting thing where we're each trying to pick off a member from both sides, where McCarthy tried to get one, Pelosi tries to get one. Greg Corumbus, I wish we had more time. Many thanks. Real lucky, we'll be able to have you back again. If you want to take it behind the curtain, and when I say that, it's not just if you have something your media won't cover. If you have an issue you want to bring before Congress and nobody will help you, you bring it to us. Behind the Curtain will help you with your issue. 703-795-5364. You come to us, and we will talk to Congress for you. Also, taking your emails, jackberkman2016@gmail.com. Remember, even when we're not on the air, you can hear us and see us and read all about us at jackberkmanradio.com. And of course, always at RadioAmerica.com. Thanks. We'll see you next week.